Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We are live worldwide on Close Up Radio Live, and this is your host, Jim Masters, and it's a real pleasure to have you here. We thank you very much for making us a part of your day. We're also excited to welcome neurodiversity advocate Claudia Mateo here on the show, and she's an advocate for neurodiversity and mental health. Claudia, EMP, as well as PSYM, is also working hard to bring diverse perspectives into focus. With 26 plus years of experience as an information technology IT professional, her professional goal is to help bring this focus to her work in ethical artificial intelligence. Claudia shares that her twice exceptional attention deficit brain, ADHD, is creative with strong attention to detail, ethics, innovation, and responsiveness, all of which are actual superpowers and valuable skills in cybersecurity and automation. With cybersecurity, you must be able to anticipate and see multiple perspectives as hackers will be looking from various angles to find a way in. Dedicated to civil advocacy and bringing diverse perspectives to the table, Claudia has been a family support group facilitator, lead presenter, and board member of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Northern Virginia, collaborating with an Over Action Committee and Lodon Chamber of Commerce and Lodon Human Services Network, Trauma Informed Community Network, and the Virginia Mental Health Access Program. Goals really are to help health and human services meet the holistic needs of all community members. He has also worked with Stop Child Abuse Now to co-implement roundtables and rights to guard boundaries to better support survivors. Looking to the future, Claudia has been working on her retirement plan for years and has all the resources in place. But working with the community, she designed a mental health center that will be free and open to the public with interactive exhibits on how to support various identities. Wow, is that so important, huh? So needed right now in our society. Mental health is the topic of the day on many occasions, and there's more support that's needed, more time and attention and focus needs to be on it. And Claudia is on top of it all, which I think is really incredible. Let's welcome her from Chantilly, Virginia. Isn't that a great name for a town? And in Northern Virginia, it's a pleasure to have her here. She said the cherry blossoms are blooming where she is in the D.C. area. Welcome, Claudia, to Close Up Radio Live. It's a real pleasure to have you with us today, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. We have a lot of wonderful thoughts here and questions and things we're going to share with our audience on the program. Now, you are neurodivergent. Maybe first you can tell us, for the listeners who might not know what that even means, what is it, what does it mean to be neurodivergent, which you have called your superpower, and maybe you can also talk more about those superpowers. So you're neurodivergent, what does that mean? And then tell us about the superpowers that result from being neurodivergent.
Sure, thanks. I'd love to do that. First, I want to note that whatever perspectives I share are my own and are not representative of any organizations with which I'm affiliated. Just as it's important to know that once you've met one neurodivergent person, you've only met one. Our characteristics vary widely, so behaviors of one person can't be generalized across whole groups. So neurodiversity refers to natural variations in the way humans think and act, like autism, attention deficit hyperactivity, or ADHD, dyslexia, many other neurological differences. I'm what they call twice exceptional, or 2E, with a mix of giftedness and ADHD. So people often associate giftedness with high achievement and ADHD with a lack of focus, but there's a lot more to it. So when I tested as gifted in elementary school, my parents and teachers had high expectations, and back then it was thought that only boys could have ADHD. So the signs that I presented were interpreted as, or misinterpreted as, a lack of effort. It wasn't until I was doing research to support one of my children, whose teacher suggested be tested for ADHD, that I realized I share the same brain wiring, and so does my parent. And it's quite common that people identify as neurodivergent as an adult while supporting a child who is neurodivergent. And the lack of focus, attention, and motivation can make it quite difficult to complete mundane tasks. And the hyper-focus and hyperactivity and hypersensitivity are perceived by some as disorganization, impulsivity, and resistance to authority. But I was born this way. I'm not broken. I'm not in need of fixing. I'm just perfectly imperfect, you know, and I just need to be embraced and supported for the beautiful way that my mind is wired. And I consider all feedback to be a gift. Even if my ADHD brain does experience rejection-sensitive dysphoria, because such cognitive dissonance is what leads me to do better when I know better. But fortunately, there have been many who do realize my potential, and they believe in me, and they help to unleash my superpowers through kindness and love, care and patience, dignity and respect. And they recognize that curious, I'm creative, detailed, emotionally intelligent, energetic, ethical, honest, humorous, innovative, loyal, and passionate. And they enable me to pay it forward for others just as they've done for me. And shout out to the Cyber Guild Diverse Minds Movement and Link OT for the opportunity to advocate for neuroinclusion at last year's Uniting Women in Cyber Conference, which will take place again this year on October 1st.
That's wonderful. That's beautiful. And thanks for sharing that in such a real and human and authentic way. That's fantastic. And that Cyber Guild Diverse Minds Movement and the conference sounds really exciting. You know, your education began with acknowledgement of your artistic skills, which is wonderful. How do these skills work with, you know, because people would say, gee, there's right brain, there's left brain, and usually somebody focuses on one more than the other, but you are literally, pun intended, full circle, using all sides, with the artistic side and then that analytical side, to be able to work in IT. Tell us about that, with the education, beginning with the acknowledgement of the artistic skills, and then you've been able to incorporate these skills working with an IT career. Tell us about all of that. And, you know, I noticed, I just want to throw this in. You read this book about Daniel Pink. I had an opportunity to meet Daniel Pink in the 2000s when he had his PBS national special, A Whole New Mind, Why Right-Brainers Will Rule the Future. I met him, and I actually co-hosted that special and interviewed Daniel Pink. So when you answer this question, I know exactly what you're talking about. He's amazing, and it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so that book that you just referenced, you know, he talked about how logical left brain functions will be automated and how the artistic right brain functions will become even more valuable. And almost 20 years later, we see that with artificial intelligence and AI, it's doing just that, you know. It consumes existing data, though. So the creative right brain thinking is what offers the more innovative new content, you know. So some might say, but AI is creating new content, albeit using existing data. Is it ethical, though, that people are being replaced instead of complemented with AI or even compensated for their talent? When people say that AI will make life easier, I wonder, but for whom? Is the existing data representative of all identities and needs? Is the existing data representative of current inequities? Is the existing data representative of speculative future state? You know, that's why I apply my artistic and creative skills to redesign a more accessible world through, we have initiatives like the Inclusive Design Guild. We have Trustworthy AI Center of Excellence. And through these kinds of volunteer activities, that's why I was among the 600 out of a company of about 300,000 employees to be inducted into a society of leading thinkers and problem solvers. But it's not enough to just generate ideas. There needs to be investment and action to transform these visions into reality and to do so ethically.
That's so important. Right, exactly. Beautifully said. And again, the work is exemplary. What, from your perspective, what is your most powerful form of self-care and why? Maybe you can define that for us.
Okay. So I've been to therapy a few times, and it gave me a great start from which I pursued my own research to figure out the right mix of solutions to address all of my needs. But at some point, I realized that therapy does not address the root cause of the harm that I experience. And that's when I turned towards advocacy as my form of self-care while caring for others. It helped me to feel like I'm part of the solution as a survivor rather than a victim of the problems of systems that were not designed with all needs in mind. And so I collaborated with advocates like Stop Child Abuse Now or SCAN, where we implemented roundtables and established rights to guard boundaries on how one would like to be supported, to include, you know, respect, privacy, accommodation, belief, identity, agency, and space. And through advocacy, not only did I embrace my neurodiversity, but I also learned to better manage my triggers. Living with complex post-traumatic stress disorder, or CPTSD, I realized that while I can't always consciously control my thoughts and feelings, I can reframe how that data is processed and how to respond, or sometimes just to be able to sit with discomfort and ride that trauma curve, you know, knowing that I'll get through it and I'll learn from it. And advocacy isn't my only form of self-care, because that can lead to caregiver burnout. So faith and family and friends and food and fun are also important aspects of my self-care. And I almost quit Taekwondo to pay for gym memberships for my family because of inflation. But the owner of the Taekwondo dojo invited me to become an instructor so that I could continue to practice at no cost while also making extra money to sign up for those gym memberships for my family and to give back to such a supportive community. And that's what it's all about, you know. And we do this by embracing the five tenets of Taekwondo of courtesy, integrity, perseverance, self-control, and indomitable spirit.
Which is really important. All of those playing off each other and working together in such a beautiful way. Now I love this term, a mental fitness coach. What exactly, from your perspective, is a mental fitness coach? And maybe out of that, you can also share talking about your work with the Battle Sport Academy and Next Play. Tell us about that.
Sure. So we all have mental health just like we all have physical health. So if we have physical fitness trainers and coaches, why not have mental fitness trainers and coaches? If anything, I struggled more to maintain my mental health than my physical health throughout my life. And my mental scars, they keep getting picked as I'm re-triggered. So I go back and forth between tending to that raw wound and a scar that grows back thicker and more resilient each time. So as a mental fitness coach, I explain mental health analogies. So that helps to remove the stigma. For example, athletes are placed on an injured reserve list for physical injuries, so why not do that for mental injuries? Just like our bodies need rest days after hard physical workouts, our mind also needs mental breaks to decompress after exerting brain energy. So we don't want to wait for injury in order to rest. You know, we want to proactively take breaks so that we can prevent the injuries and we can, prevent both mental and physical injuries. And in addition to mental fitness, the Next Play program through Battle Sports Academy, we also coach young athletes on financial literacy, branding, life skills, and outreach.
That's incredible. That's very, very important. It's exciting, the work that you do. I know you're passionate about it. You also, and this I think is really cool, that you are creating this, and it's so important. So kudos to you, Claudia, the upcoming Community Mental Health Center, and who you're teaming up with and working with to make that happen.
Yeah, so through my service as a family support group facilitator, lead presenter, and board member of the Northern Virginia chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, I've been blessed to collaborate with multiple human services networks, health and human services networks, to address the holistic needs of our community members. And that helps to shift the burden of care off of individuals to trauma-informed, healing-centered communities of support. So our government programs, healthcare providers, and nonprofits are all interconnected with multiple health and human services networks. So if somebody reaches out to a helpline for assistance paying a bill, for example, the representative will work with the community members to assess their holistic needs. Maybe that person can't pay the bill because of a job loss. Maybe that job loss was due to a mental health condition. The representative will reach out to the Workforce Resource Center to help with the job search. They'll reach out to the professional behavioral health, as well as our interim peer mental health support from NAMI, and then collectively we can help lift that person back on their feet. Now, imagine being able to walk into a museum-like facility that's free and open to the public, and at the entrance you're greeted by a virtual tour guide chatbot who anonymously asks questions that assess whether you have specific needs and direct you to various options that might be of interest, whether it's an interactive hands-on exhibit or a particular area of the Resource Learning Center, the Healing Garden for equine therapy, the sensory space for neurodiversity, or maybe the performance stage for music therapy, you know? And after some self-directed and guided learning and hands-on experiences, you can decide what works best and reach out to those promoted organizations for additional services. And because I'm a proponent of nothing about us without us, I've connected with various organizations that focus on support for particular identity groups so that we can ensure diverse representation and accessibility, whether it be age, athletics or gaming, brain wiring, you know, gender and sexuality, interfaith and spirituality, race, and, you know, service, like first responders, law enforcement, service members, veterans, families, you know, stuff like that.
That's fantastic. It really, really is. That's quite amazing and quite exciting as well, I think. You know, I understand also you hosted a series on talk shows as well. Tell us, maybe there's some stories that you'd like to share as well.
Yeah, so the founder of Battle Sports Academy and I met when we co-hosted a talk show series featuring a diverse panel of regular people having conversations about topics that most would not touch. And we felt that it was important to model civil discourse and empathy through diversity of thought and critical thinking. So, and then in the latter part of each session, we open up the floor for audience members to engage with the panel as well. And there were a couple of particularly interesting, like, touching moments that come to mind for me. One was when an audience member shared her experience as a Black woman who attended segregated schools, followed by another audience member who shared her experiences as a white woman who witnessed racism as the schools were desegregating. And in another session, we had an Asian woman who was immunocompromised and explained her needs during the pandemic. And there was a white man who is vaccine-free who replied that he would wear a mask to help her feel more comfortable if they returned to the workplace. And it's such caring interactions and exchanges that help people to see beyond black and white, you know, right and wrong, us versus them, and to see one another as human and to consider the needs of one another, because it is possible to set aside our own stances to support one another when you see somebody in emotional distress.
Yeah, that's so very, very important. Would you like to talk more and share with our listeners about your work in ethical AI? And maybe you can even define that for our audience, because it's so new for everybody, what ethical AI is. And when did you first know technology might even be harmful? I mean, obviously there's some good with AI, but then in the wrong hands, it could be not so good.
Yeah, so I've automated finance and operations and bid responses for about 10 years. So AI isn't new. It's only recently trending because it became open to the public. So being familiar with many of the automation challenges in those 10 years, I saw a need to adhere to best practices like content curation. And so I immediately recognized a lot of potential harms. And a lot of it is already documented in, like, the Ledger of Harms by the Center for Humane Technology. And so ethical AI comes up with, like, principles for, like, fairness, our adversarial robustness, trustworthiness, data privacy, explainability. Those are the pillars of ethical AI. And so I was born before computers were publicly accessible. And when computers were available, I remember initial exposure to pornography in the form of naked ASCII drawings as a child. So it didn't take long for me to recognize harm. And it was interesting to grow up in that period of sexual freedom followed by the Me Too movement, you know, the socioeconomic factors changed throughout our lives, you know. It's really interesting to follow. I also have 8 out of 10 adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, so I'm hypersensitive to detecting harm. And when I had kids of my own and instinctively disciplined them the way I was disciplined, I had to pause and ask myself, you know, why am I hitting or yelling if I didn't like that being done to me when I was a child? So I consciously had to break that cycle of abuse when I began to more calmly focus on the needs of my children instead of my own ego. So rather than to focus on how others might perceive me as a parent if I don't keep my kids in check through tough love, you know, I learned that love doesn't have to be tough to be effective. And that's given me the strength to challenge the status quo, because hurt people can hurt people, but healed people can also heal people.
Yes. Absolutely right, and that's very, very important to realize, and it's essential. How do you define success? I mean, everybody has their own definitions and version, but how do you define success, and how do you see your work in IT?
Well, success has been predefined for me by my parents, society, and such for decades. But that same perfectionism that led me to such success also presented challenges throughout my life. And in fact, perfectionism is among the leading causes of suicide. And I achieved peace when I redefined success for myself. You know, titles, credentials, money, and power, that's not how I define success. So those kinds of achievements are not meaningful to me. Success to me is answering the calling to fulfill my purpose in life and helping people. And I give back not for recognition, wealth, or out of pity. I do so because I'd love to live in a world of co-liberation where we all can thrive together. You know, so success to me is balancing the needs of self, others, and the world. So I really appreciate Close-Up Television and Radio for spotlighting ordinary people like me to expand our reach of support. And I wish everybody so much hope, love, and peace.
No, you're not ordinary. You're extraordinary. The work that you're doing is quite special and quite important. And what would be maybe a final message for our listeners where we have another minute or so that you'd like to share? Why do you love doing this work so much?
It gives me hope. I mean, there's so much negative press out there. You know, it can really impact your mental health. I mean, I set a boundary where I'm not on public social media for my mental health, you know. And so working in person with people, with advocates who all share so much love and just a desire to all thrive together, I mean, that's what it's all about, you know.
It really, really is. Absolutely. And again, you're loving the ride and appreciating it. And if folks want to make contact, is there a website or a LinkedIn or somewhere people can be directed to?
I'll give you my personal advocacy email address is mychoiceforhope@gmail.com. And I have a website, too, called My Choice for Hope, and it's on WordPress. And that's where I consolidate various mental health and substance use resources. So if anyone's looking for resources, we have global, national, and local level resources on that website. And the next step is to add a chat bot so that you can ask for something specific and be able to find exactly what you need and then create this mental health center where you can go in person to try out the resources and stuff.
That's fantastic. Claudia, thanks so much for joining us on the program. It's a real pleasure. I hope we get a chance to explore some more, maybe tackle some more areas of this extraordinary work, maybe hear some testimonial success stories. But it was a pleasure, and I hope you enjoyed the time with me as much as I have with you, Claudia.
I definitely did. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I hope we, again, connect again and chat some more. That would be fantastic. Neurodiversity advocate Claudia, she is amazing, isn't she? Claudia Matteo, she's here on our show, and we celebrate her. We also celebrate our listeners. We thank you for tuning in. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time till next time on Close Up Radio Live. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back in just a moment with more exciting guests just for you. Till then, for all of us, have a great day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.